is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Chinedu in Washington. The South African Health Department says it's on track to vaccinate at least 5.5 million people by the end of June in the African country worst affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. This comes after it lifted the suspension on using the Johnson & Johnson or J&J vaccine, following global fears it could cause blood clots. Now that it's been established that this is extremely rare, say health department authorities, the jab will be rolled out in South Africa with appropriate warnings given to those receiving it. Darren Taylor has more.
The J&J vaccine is extremely important to South Africa because it comes in a single shot, can be stored at normal fridge temperature, and is very effective against the highly infectious variant circulating in the country. Health economist Fundile Nyati says South Africa's in a much better position than it was a couple of months ago when it was battling for vaccine supplies.
When we are able to secure 61 million doses, 31 from J&J and also 30 from Pfizer, I think that is something good that we should actually applaud. Yes, we have paused the J&J for the past 2 weeks or so, but even that was good because we were interrogating science, and now we can be able to warn our people of potential dangers of the vaccine.
But Nyati says the government hasn't focused enough on educating the public about COVID-19 vaccines. He says the state seems to think its job is just to buy vaccines and people will automatically turn up to be injected. That's not the way any immunization campaign works, explains Nyati. He says vaccinating 60 million people requires highly effective communication.
Yes, there's communication at ministerial level, there's communication at president's level, but below that, especially where service delivery takes place, at provincial level and even at municipal level, there really is a big vacuum. And unfortunately, life does not allow for vacuum.
That communication void, says Nyati, has fueled all kinds of conspiracy theories about the vaccines.
That has led to a lot of vaccine hesitancy. And it is something then that we cannot allow as we are looking to vaccinate people. Because even now,
the health department says first in the queue for jabs will be people over 60 who should register on its electronic verification data system, or EVDS. But again, says Nyati, the government isn't being considerate.
People in rural areas who don't have access to the technologies for EVDS, it's going to be challenging for them. It's much more easier for somebody like me with a smartphone.
The economist says the struggle to secure vaccines should be a lesson to the country to plan for the future.
In 1994, we had the capacity to develop our own vaccines. And over the years, we've lost that capacity. We need to learn to be self-sufficient because this is not the last pandemic. Investing in science and technologies so that we can be much more self-reliant as a country is something that we should take out of this.
Nyati adds that the pandemics also sparked scientific advances in South Africa.
Our investment in genomics has actually put us in the lead to be able to see variants as they are coming in. Many countries are vaccinating without even knowing if they've got variants and whether those variants are actually going to affect the effectiveness of the vaccine. So it is something that...
However, like other experts, Nyati is convinced the vaccine rollout is too late to prevent a third wave of COVID-19 infections sweeping the country within the next 2 months. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South Africa commemorated 27 years of freedom today, marking the end of apartheid. However, the country of world icon Nelson Mandela finds itself still dealing with teething problems, with many citizens expressing unhappiness. Growing inequalities and corruption have often triggered violent protests from citizens accusing the politically connected of stealing their economic and social freedom. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
When South Africa attained its freedom in 1994, citizens described it as an end of a dark, oppressive era and the beginning of a new era where all South Africans would be afforded equal opportunities. Instead, inequalities, poverty, unemployment, and racial tensions are getting worse by the day. On the economic front, testimony to a commission of inquiry into corruption reveals that politicians and their connections have looted millions of dollars from state coffers while the majority wallow in poverty. Unemployment stands at 32.5%. 27-year-old Emmanuel Haukelo accuses the political elite of betraying the nation.
I don't have much to celebrate. People that are in power are corrupt. I don't celebrate freedom.
In his Freedom Day speech, President Cyril Ramaphosa admitted that although a lot has been done, including issuing social grants and free housing to the poor, more remains.
For those who continue to suffer from the lack of basic services like running water, without proper sanitation, and for those who have no jobs to support themselves, true freedom still remains elusive.
Christy van der Westhuizen is from the Center for the Advancement of Non-Racism and Democracy at the National Mandela University.
The majority of people who are black are still living in poverty. And we also still have the highest socioeconomic inequality in the world. This is according to official indexes.
Still, some are, however, grateful that they have freedom of association, expression, and free political speech. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Protests demanding the return of civilian rule in Chad turned violent today as demonstrators defied a ban by the military transitional government. At least 2 people were reported killed and 27 others injured in the capital, with another fatality in the country's second largest city, Modu. The military took control after President Idris Deby was killed by rebels last week while visiting frontline troops. His son heads the military council, and critics have called that an, quote, institutional coup, unquote, and a monarchical dynasty. Deby, who ruled for 30 years, has just been re-elected. Anti-French sentiments also was running high among the protesters, who blamed France for backing the Deby regime against the will of the people. Officials said the protests burned tires and attacked a bus, where a woman was killed after refusing to flee. Security forces responded with tear gas. The protest comes a day after military leaders reappointed Albert Pahimi Pandeke as prime minister of a transitional government. The military council promised an 18-month transition to elections as it fights off a rebel offensive. The U.S. State Department said the naming of a civilian prime minister is potentially a positive first step in restoring civilian governance, unquote. The governor of Nigeria's Niger State is warning that Boko Haram forces could soon target the nation's capital, Abuja, after the militants captured several towns in the state. Governor Abubakar Sani Bello told VOA's House of Service he feels helpless in the fight against the extremists and has repeatedly sought help from the military and federal government in vain. Abuja is about 40 kilometers from the Niger State border. His comments come amid a surge of reports of attacks by militants or bandits around the country. In Kebbi State in the northwest, police said Monday that 9 of their officers were killed by an armed gang attacking a village to steal cattle. In addition, there have been reports of attacks on camps of internally displaced persons in Benue State in the southeast, as well as reports that at least 2 university students kidnapped from Greenfields University in Kaduna State have been found killed. Nigeria has experienced a surge in both criminal and militant violence this year, even as it continues to battle the Boko Haram Islamist extremists in the northeast for nearly a decade. Boko Haram has killed and kidnapped thousands of people and forced tens of thousands to flee their homes. Nigeria's National Broadcasting Commission has suspended the broadcast license of Channels Television and fined the broadcaster 5 million naira, or about $13,000, for allegedly breaching the broadcast code in its Politics Today program. In a letter, NBC accused Channels TV of allowing the spokesperson of Indigenous People of Biafra, IPOB, Emma Powerful, to make secessionist and inciting declarations on air without cautioning or reprimanding the source. The NBC said that violated the broadcast code. The government has listed Indigenous People of Biafra as a secessionist organization. Many of Zimbabwe's retirees complain they have become impoverished as the value of their pensions has been eroded by the country's persistent economic problems. They are now hoping that their plight will be eased by amending a law that governs pensions and insurance funds. Reporter Kuzani Muzengi brings us more from Bulawayo. Zimbabwe's second biggest city.
Munyaradzi Mukwada is in his late 70s and worked for the Bulawayo City Council for nearly 40 years. Mukwada, who was in middle management, says he earned a salary that enabled him to live comfortably with his family and buy a house and two cars. But Mukwada, a member of the Bulawayo City Pensioners Association, says he's now counted among the majority of pensioners who can hardly get by daily with his small pension check. He says he gets less than 2,000 Zimbabwean dollars per month, or roughly $20. That's a problem because he has to pay nearly that amount in rates and tariffs for his house. His car license per quarter costs nearly 5,000 Zimbabwe dollars, the equivalent of about $50. And he can no longer afford to pay for his funeral insurance. He says he fears that if he and his wife die, they will get pauper's burials. When he was working, Mukwada contributed a significant part of his pay towards his pension, and when the country adopted the use of multiple currencies in 2009, the contributions were in United States dollars in line with his salary. Mukwada and his colleagues say they do not understand why their pension amounts are so paltry. They are not happy with the way their retirement fund works, as is the case with more pensioners in other sectors of the economy. Lucas Munyika worked for over 15 years for the state-owned public transport entity, the Zimbabwe United Passenger Company, or ZUPCO. Munyika is a member of the Zimbabwe Pensions and Insurance Rights Trust, ZIMPERT, which advocates for the rights and welfare of pensioners. He claims that corruption is rampant in the pension fund industry and believes it is one of the main reasons why retired people like himself are shortchanged. He says the administration of the funds should go back to the good old days when retired workers would get real value from their pensions. He believes that part of the problem is rampant corruption and says the anti-corruption unit should investigate all those involved in the pensions industry, including employers, fund administrators, and regulators. Under the country's laws, all workers in both private and public sectors have to contribute towards the statutory National Social Security Authority Fund, and when they retire, they get payouts from the fund in addition to requisite pensions. Mismanagement and corruption allegations have often dogged the fund, and beneficiaries constantly complain that the terminal benefits they get are far from adequate. Felix Chari is a university lecturer in economics. Chari says the hardships that pensioners face are a symptom of the broader macroeconomic problems.
The loss in the value of pensions and insurances is a reflection of the deteriorating economic situation and policy inconsistencies in the country. Inflation continues to surge. The situation is not peculiar to pensioners and the insured, but the generality of Zimbabweans. I recommend regulatory amendments that peg pensions values in hard currency such as the US dollar.
In 2015, government instituted a commission of inquiry to look into the issue of loss of value of pensions and insurance policies between the 20-year period from 1996 to 2016. The commission of inquiry finished its work in 2017, and one of its major findings was that inconsistent and unpredictable policies, including currency regime changes, were among the major causes of loss of value of pensions and insurance claims. It made a number of recommendations, including the need to come up with uniform methods for calculating pensions and insurance claims in spite of whatever economic changes may occur. Parliament is in the process of amending the Provident and Pensions Funds Bill with a view to improving the regulation of pension funds and the insurance industry. Lloyd Gumbo is the public relations officer of the Insurance and Pensions Commission, which oversees the private sector pensions industry. He believes amending the law shall help pensioners.
This Pension and Provident Funds Bill now has provisions that will capacitate IPEC in terms of what it can do in supervising the pensions industry, making sure that the challenges that were there, the gaps that were there, are closed. So this will go a very long way in making sure that the interests of pension fund members are protected.
It remains to be seen whether or not enhancing the law will help change the plight of Zimbabwean pensioners, but for now, this is the one thing they are pinning their hopes on. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, I am Kudzanai Musengi.
The Zimbabwean National Parks Authority says it plans to sell the rights to shoot as many as 500 elephants to help fund the operations of the organization. Observers said the move is likely to attract the criticism of conservationists around the world From Harare, Andy Gondo has more on the story.
In an interview with VOA, the Zimbabwe National Parks and Wildlife Authority, or ZIMPAX, revealed it has to shore up funds for its operations through various initiatives, including the sale of hunting concessions. The Parks Authority also says it has taken a financial hit due to the effects of COVID-related travel restrictions on tourism. Zimbabwe has the world's second biggest population of elephants, which ranges between 80,000 and 100,000, growing at 5% per year, according to Parks. Neighboring Botswana is the largest herd at well over 106,000 elephants, according to CITES, Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. The elephant herd in that country has risen exponentially from 34,000 to over 106,000 since 1983. And just last month, Botswana offered rights to shoot 287 elephants. The country's hunting season resumed on April 6 after the lifting of a ban imposed by former President Ian Khama in 2014. The International Union of Conservation of Nature, IUCN, says Africa's 350,000 elephant herd is in the red zone, but Zimbabwe argues that alongside its neighbor, the situations are unique. ZIMPAC's spokesperson, Tinashe Farao, explains the rationale for the hunting quota, with the human life conflict being a major consideration in culling animal populations. He says that's because elephants last year killed 60 people and 21 people to date this year.
Since 1991, the hunting quota for elephants was pegged at 500. And 500 is set after consulting stakeholders and everyone involved in the hunting industry. So the 500 is an annual quota, which is set. But we have never exhausted that hunting quota since 1991, which means we are allowed to hunt at most 500 elephants since 1991.
Critics have cited both countries for their practice, with conservationists decrying the profiteering from elephant hunting. ZIMPAC's spokesman, Tinashe Farao, weighs in, explaining that in addition to a lack of funds from government, the country's laws allow culling. He adds that they are following a science-backed approach and recommendations from the European Union in its parks management.
I think we are probably the only wildlife management authority in the world which does not receive funding from central government. And we eat what we kill. We normally rely on tourism to fund conservation, to fund wildlife management. And you all know what is happening globally because of this COVID thing. So we are struggling. We are having a lot of challenges in terms of funding our wildlife management.
Observers say that the concessions are upwards of US$70,000 per animal, but ZIMPAC denies that. It says that the government gazetted fee is US$10,000, which excludes camping, tour guide fees, accommodation, transport, and all other relevant costs, including charges to export the trophy. Conservationist Luke Brown with the Zambezia Conservation Alliance says maintaining animal populations is an intricate discipline.
Conservation efforts are hugely reliant on tourism revenues, and yet tourism is hugely reliant on conservation as well. The two go hand in hand, and without that fragile balance, we find ourselves in a difficult position.
Ross Kennedy of leading tourism operator Africa Obida sees the numbers of wildlife in the region called the Kavango Zambezi Transfrontier Conservation Area, Kaza TFCA, as a blessing rather than a burden.
In the Kaza region itself, we are blessed with some of the finest wildlife numbers, herds, diversity on the continent, and vast areas of natural bushveld, vast areas of very low numbers of human population and a few cities in the Kaza region.
But in areas where populous communities live alongside wildlife areas, observers and stakeholders note that the coexistence between people and animals is quite fragile. And that's why policymakers and wildlife activists are encouraged to cooperate so the animals are protected and can provide valuable tourism dollars to the community. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe.
An auction for elephants licensed in Botswana would benefit local communities, including a wildlife-rich but poor village near the iconic Okavango Delta. The southern African country recently opened its hunting season with nearly 300 elephant licenses on offer. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Mukundi Sundube has the details.
The government reserved 5 licenses for the remote village of Kawa in the northwest of the country. The village is home to fewer than 1,000 people and faces a rising human-elephant conflict. Each license was sold for $65,000 to a local safari company during a recent auction. The operator will in turn sell the licenses to international hunters for higher fees. Last year's auction saw an elephant fetch as much as $43,000. Joseph Kachangue, chairperson of the Kawa Community Trust, says the money raised from the auction would be used for developments within the village, which has poor infrastructure, despite being in a prime tourism area. Kangwa resident Kandipo Kambimpa is happy with the revenue from hunting, the first in more than 5 years. Botswana lifted a 5-year hunting moratorium in 2019.
Indeed, we are excited. The roads here are poor. There is no proper clinic and schools, yet we live with a lot of animals. We are happy that we are finally benefiting from our wildlife resources.
In lifting the hunting ban, President Mokgweetsi Masisi said there should be a balance between communities benefiting and managing the elephant herd.
We have first determined that we're going to involve our communities as the first beneficiaries of any interaction with our wildlife species, elephants included. And for those areas that are not suitable for photographic tourism particularly, yes, there will be very controlled hunting, but not trophy hunting. And so it's a delicate balance that you're drawing.
This year's elephant hunts come after the International Union for Conservation of Nature declared elephants endangered. But Botswana has the world's largest elephant herd at more than 130,000 animals and says hunts will not be halted. Despite criticism from animal activists, for VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Haboroni, Botswana.
U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken today meets with officials in Kenya and Nigeria as part of his first virtual trip to Africa as a top U.S. diplomat. He meets virtually with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and Foreign Minister Geoffrey Onyama to underscore shared goals of strengthening democratic governance, building lasting security, and promoting economic ties and diversification. Blinken's meeting with Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta and Cabinet Secretary Rachelle Omamo will celebrate the 57-year-old bilateral relations and to explore ways to address the COVID-19 pandemic. The meeting comes a day after the U.S. pressed Ethiopia to end the conflicts in the Tigray region. U.S. officials also call for allied Eritrean troops to withdraw from the region. The United States' non-humanitarian assistance to Ethiopia remains paused to pressure Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government to do more to stop the conflict, officials said. A UN report says the slow pace of reforms in South Sudan raises the risk that the country could fall back into a, quote, large-scale conflict, unquote, amid growing security and political fractures. UN experts in charge of overseeing sanctions and an arms embargo said in a document which was recently submitted to the Security Council that more than a year of political disputes over how to implement the renewed peace accord has widened existing political, military, and ethnic divisions. They urged renewed momentum from regional and international partners to patch up the divisions. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the internet.